A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and by Dominic Fifield of The Athletic. According to Jurgen Klopp, making history isn't what it's cracked up to be. I get what he's saying, because in football you live in the moment. But to understand the present, you have to be aware of the past. Remember Fergie crowing about knocking Liverpool off their perch? United are now so far off the pace, it's embarrassing. They renew tribal rivalry this week, but times have changed, haven't they?
Big time, yeah. I mean, really have changed. They're on a different plane, aren't they, at the moment, Liverpool to Manchester United. The standards that they're setting on the pitch, and probably off it as well, we'll get to that, I'm sure, are pretty vast. And when you consider the money that Manchester United have spent since Fergie left, you have to say that everything around Manchester United hasn't moved with the times. Liverpool, very modern club, modern structure, very modern manager that plays an attractive, fast brand of football. It's fantastic to see Liverpool where they are right now, but equally it's a little bit sad to see United struggling. I do think they'll be back, Manchester United. These things are cyclical. I think they will one day rule the roost again, but it's going to take a while, that's for sure.
Let's try and be specific across the club, Dom. In which areas do you think they are particularly inferior at the moment, United?
Probably structurally behind the scenes. They seem, it's quite an old school feel to the way United work with Ed Woodward, signing off the deals, etc. I mean, obviously they've got a good scouting and recruitment department that is in place, but when you look at what Liverpool have done through Fenway, with Michael Edwards doing the deals for them, there seems to be a sort of pattern to it. And the players that they bring in, they have brought in over the last 4 years, I'd say, have been very much, you know, within Klopp's philosophy, ideology, that's been running through their entire strategy. Whereas everything about United's been far more haphazard. I would say that last summer did potentially mark a bit of a sea change in United's recruitment policy, and it was more promising what they did there with the signings of Dan James and Wan-Bissaka and the like, and Harry Maguire, you could even argue as well, to be honest, albeit they paid premium price for him. But in the past, when you look at the type of players they were signing before, they were attempting to buy pedigree, but pedigree that was almost past it. I mean, Schweinsteiger, Alexis Sanchez, even when he went there, it just didn't work out. So if last summer was the start of a new strategy and they maintained that, then there is signs of promise for the future, and that gap can potentially be closed.
Because that's what's most impressive about Liverpool, is the way that they get value out of players that you can't really see much value in. So I'll give you a small example. Yeah. Alan Rodriguez da Silva, they've just sold him back to Brazil, made a £2.5 million profit on a player who had 6 months left on his contract, who hadn't been anywhere near the first team, and, you know, basically had been there and risen without trace.
Yeah, look, they're very good at it. Michael Edwards is arguably the best in the business at what he does. I mean, in terms of the players that they're recruiting, no real duds of late. They've all fitted in seamlessly and added value. And you could say that they've got top dollar for a lot of players. I mean, Solanke went for almost 20 million, Jordan Ibe before that. And you could point towards a number of players that have gone into championship clubs that haven't really worked, but they got a lot of money. So yeah, away from the pitch, Liverpool are a slick, well-oiled machine. United are old school, absolutely. I think it's an absolute... People were saying Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's got to go, and he may not be the best candidate for the job. Is he worthy of being the boss of one of the world's biggest clubs? Probably not. But I don't think that's their biggest problem at the moment. I think he's a perfectly adequate manager. They need someone in that role that bridges between him and Woodward. They need it desperately. And I don't know what they're waiting for.
Because you look at it, you've got a Merseyside derby. OK, it was in the League Cup, which doesn't have the cachet of other competitions. 7,000 empty seats at Old Trafford. You've got the fans now being very robust in anti-Woodward chants.
Yes, and that was the poison that was very evident on at the weekend. I mean, with those chants, you know, that's just the sort of underlying anti-Glazer sentiment that's always been at that club in the last,
because it went dormant for a while, didn't it?
Yeah. But I think it's always been simmering there under the surface. And then it's ironic that it surfaced at a game where they won 4-0, and you know, and were, albeit they dismissing the team, the division's bottom club, but it is always there, and it won't go away until there are major changes in terms of the ownership of that club, and that frustration will surface again, and you know, it will surface at Anfield at the weekend as well. There are so many problems in that respect, and so much a very disgruntled fan base in terms of the Glazer ownership. But I just look at it and think it is cyclical. You know, we could have made the same criticisms of Liverpool in the 90s, even in the noughties, actually. I mean, some of the players that they brought in, and we'll go back to the under Houllier when they, you know, signed El Hadj Diouf and Salif Diaw, and we all thought they were going to be world beaters, but actually this didn't work at all, and they paid big money at the time for those players. And even what they did with the Suarez money, I mean, Andy Carroll for that amount of money just didn't work out.
I think the basis of this United team is pretty good. And Ollie, bless him, it was a great excuse. And full credit to him for going armed at the press conference when he said, look, people are raving about Liverpool's B team beating Everton, but they had an older average age than my first team. It's a grey line, but it has merits, and I do think that over time, if they stick with this policy, United they will get better.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to bring in Bruno Fernandes from Sporting for 60 million.
Yeah, wow,
a lot of money to pay, isn't it?
It's a lot of money, not by United standards, is it?
But no, they've got that money, haven't they? I mean, that is one thing that will always go for them at the moment.
I'd rather have a guy like that that's hungry on the way up, eager to prove himself at the highest level, than carry a passenger like Pogba, who I think is just taking the mickey out of Manchester United now. I think he needs to be shipped on. There's no doubt he's a brilliant talent, but he needs to go. And if that means spending big money on guys like Fernandes and giving them a chance, so be it. Look, I spoke to Andy Brassel yesterday, European football expert, and yeah, he was full of praise for Bruno Fernandes. He thinks he's just the type of player they need. So let's watch this space.
Let's look at Liverpool. The one thing that struck me, Dom, watching them at the weekend, was the relentlessness of their perfectionism. Mm. You know, Henderson's going off the pitch, spewing about it. He doesn't. You know, we didn't play well. There is that desire to continually improve and be the best. That says everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and it says a lot about Jurgen Klopp, really, I think, and the mentality that he's instilled in the team. It's probably easier to be like that when you're 15 points clear at the top. And it was a great win. I mean, I like about they're a team, aren't they? I mean, there are great individuals dotted around the Premier League. You can look at De Bruyne at City, or even, you know, the likes of Aubameyang at Arsenal. But Liverpool as a collective just function brilliantly together, and they don't always win emphatically. They've squeezed out a lot of results by one goal this season, but they're a machine. They know exactly what each other's supposed to be doing, and if those standards drop slightly, I mean, that does threaten, if you know, if one or two players don't quite function to their top level, it does threaten the sort of smooth running of the project, which is presumably why Jordan Henderson loses his rag occasionally. But there's just so much to admire in the way that they're conducting themselves and indeed walking this division.
Mm. What also struck me was that, OK, we concentrate, understandably enough, on the front three. Mm. What about Alisson as a goalkeeper. Is he the best in the Premier League?
It's hard to think of a better all-rounder, isn't it? I think Edison's probably the closest now. David De Gea has certainly fallen away the last couple of seasons. They're neck and neck, I'd say, Edison and Alisson. But I'd probably go with Alisson myself if I was a manager on size and presence. I do like that about him. But
his handling's so short.
It's class. I mean, Liverpool, to their credit, they knew exactly... They were a very good team before Alisson came and before Van Dijk came, but they were never going to be a title-winning team unless they got top players in those positions. And they did. They paid big dough, didn't they?
Yeah.
They didn't... You know, obviously, they quibbled quite hard with Southampton at the time. That didn't go smoothly, but it was worth the effort. And, those two transfers, when we look back in the history of Liverpool Football Club, look back at the history of this great Liverpool side, one of the all-time classic Premier League outfits, the acquisition of Alisson and Van Dijk will be a big turning point.
It may not be that they spend massively on other players when they regenerate this team or seek to regenerate. I mean, we've seen their transfer policy now. They're picking up bargains, really, on potential. But they, as Adrian says, they knew those two areas they needed to strengthen to get anywhere, and they paid premium for those two positions. I mean, it's unlikely that they go out and spend £100 million on a Jadon Sancho, because they're more likely to either have them in-house already or to buy someone for 20 and develop.
Yeah, you can compare it with Arsenal, actually, with going for Nicola Pepe, £72 million. They really didn't need it. They really didn't need it, but they saw an opportunity and thought, yeah, we'll go for it. It's not looking great at the moment, but I think he's a talent. But had they spent £72 million on an awesome central midfielder or a world-class centre-back, there's every chance that Arsenal wouldn't be sitting in mid-table right now. So it is choosing how to spend your money.
Absolutely.
Tottenham on Saturday. You know, you've worked a lot with Jose Mourinho over the years. Did that sum up the fact that he's in danger of being regarded as yesterday's man?
I get the criticisms that's flown his way. And you know, when you see what a Pep or Jurgen Klopp has developed, the style of football their teams play, the sort of swashbuckling, possession-based, attack-minded football, it can make a Mourinho team feel slightly archaic and the approach feel slightly dated. But I do think there were pretty exceptional circumstances, really, the weekend. And we're saying that Spurs should have just gone gung-ho and flown in at Liverpool from the start. I think they would have been absolutely hammered had they done that. And I think Mourinho knew that as well. And at least the way that they approached that game on Saturday evening gave them a chance of nicking something at the end. And to be honest, they could have done, like a lot of teams have said against Liverpool this season, they could have nicked something. If the finishing had been slightly more assured in the last 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, they would probably got a point out of the match. And then we would have been saying, wow, Tottenham have just become the second team to take a point off Liverpool this season. And haven't, you know, Mourinho's tactics been brilliant. We can't sit here and act surprised when Mourinho does this, because we knew exactly how his team would play. Spurs knew exactly how his team would play against fellow members of the elite. They weren't going to be expansive and risk everything to, you know, to go at opponents. This is just the way he is. And I still think that if Jose Mourinho is still there in 18 months' time, then Spurs will probably have won a trophy in that time. It won't have been won particularly prettily, but they would probably have won it.
Yeah, he's got a... This job will test whether he can still improve players, because he's going to have to, isn't he? Yeah. Not going to have the funds. The quality of Tottenham's squad is good, but it's not great, and he probably needs better players to make his style of play work. And it can work. Mm. We've seen it down the years. Mm. But it means that he's going to have to choose very wisely in the market and improve what he's got. And obviously the jury is out on that at the moment.
Because one of the things that's thrown at him is that he doesn't trust young players.
Yeah.
Understandably in many ways. But if you look on Saturday, I thought we had an example of the culture that is established within the club at academy youth level, where, you know, Jeffrey Tanganga comes in. John McDermott at that club has instilled a great ethos amongst all the younger players. With Tanganga, for instance, I can remember him telling me that he was a bit worried about some of his attitudes. Mm-hmm. So for 2 weeks, he made him go and work with the ground staff.
Mm-hmm. Good,
yeah. And you know, understand, you know, here's guys essentially...
The real world.
The real world, the living wage, you know, they're getting in, it's cold, they're outside, you do the same thing. Now, when you've got that type of culture at the club, why don't you use it?
Well, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Are there other players that
yeah,
they could...
Yeah, probably are, but I suppose Mourinho is sitting there thinking, well, I've got the board that brought me in here to qualify for the top four. Inevitably, with guys like... I mean, Tanganga worked almost in conjunction with Serge Aurier, didn't he? I don't know whether he would have played him in a flat back four and trusted him in the same way. He was actually more of a reflection, possibly, on Aurier's defensive prowess at the weekend. But
He did well, didn't he? He played him,
and he played well, and... Yeah, he's got that experience. Maybe he is out to prove people wrong, Jose Mourinho, but he won't play them unless he trusts them, because this is a big job for Jose Mourinho. This is huge. If he fluffs his lines at Spurs, Jose may never work in the Premier League again. So he needs to get it right. And it's not, he's not in this to mentor people. He's there to win games. He obviously felt that young boy was ready. And I think, based on what we saw, he was.
Mm. How do you think they'll cope without Harry Kane?
Well, I don't think they will. Not particularly well. I mean, I don't think Mourinho has the same faith in Son through the middle that Pochettino did.
Yeah.
I think they need to buy someone this month. I know Piatek is being touted to a lot of clubs in England, not just Spurs. But
he's being touted. I think tells you that he's maybe not.
Yeah, top and it's not gone well. It's not gone well at Milan, has it? Well, it doesn't go well at Milan for a lot of people these days. He was highly rated at Genoa.
That's true.
It's just whether they think that £30 million, which is the fee being mentioned, is considered a risk or not. And I would argue that a club like Spurs, with aspirations to be in the top four, regardless of the new stadium, and they should be. £30 million is not what it used to be. £30 million for a player that has clearly got potential and could do a job, and potentially, you know, he could, if he does well in this period, could work with Harry Kane, is worth spending.
How can Spurs, a colossal club, not have a backup centre forward?
Well,
no, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but that just reflects badly on the hierarchy at the club, doesn't it?
And the fact that I think they've sort of. They've used it as such an excuse. Oh, we can't get anyone decent because they don't want to be a backup to Harry Kane. That's garbage. I'm sorry. There's tons of good players that would jump at the chance of joining Spurs and proving themselves. They have to buy. If they don't, by the way, if they buy that guy or somebody else and don't want to start him, Jose has to have a plan B tactically, because you can't go as direct as Spurs are without. A guy that can hold the ball up. And Moura and Son aren't those type of players. They need to play through the lines much better than they have done under him.
Yeah. Are we seeing, because you touched on it, Dom, a reaffirmation of the limitations of Daniel Levy's strategy? It seems that they're almost this week going to be quite content to pinch Gedson Fernandez away from West Ham and have him on an 18-month loan.
He's young, by the way.
So yeah, he's young. But then the fact they're not paying the money suggests that they're not necessarily convinced that he's the man.
No, I spoke to Brassel yesterday, Andy Brassel, and on that he said that it's more coming from the Portuguese end. They've been stung too many times by letting players go early for lower money. So the new policy there is we'll loan you out for 18 months, by which time you'll be worth a considerable amount more money, and then we'll do the deal. So I think it's one of those Spurs can't get him in any other.
I know this is probably not what you want to hear, Mike, but you know, we're mid-January at the moment. Let's see what Daniel Levy has sanctioned purchase-wise at the end of the month. I mean, this is what the January window is a difficult window, we all know that, and the type of player that is on the market generally, that there is a reason they're on the market in January. It's difficult to prize away the best, you know, stellar performers from elite clubs in this window, but you can be driven by injury crises, which Spurs have got at the moment with Kane, and that can make it a more urgent demand that you go out there and find replacements. And so let's see how they cope with it. And you're right, it's a test. It's a test of the Levy philosophy. It's a test of what Mourinho knows about the market and you know, where he can he feels he can work with players and get the best out of them, because they need something. They can't muddle on by. Again, this is a... I mean, arguably, that they... I know we're saying that Kane could be back in April and he has this phenomenal, I'll get back quicker than before, attitude to himself. But we might not see the best of Harry Kane at Spurs until May. I mean, that's the reality of it, the severity of that injury.
Mm. Who fills that void for England? Is it Tammy Abraham? You know, he's 13 Premier League goals this season.
Yeah, it was an interesting debate, isn't it? I think it's up for grabs. Tammy Abraham has done brilliantly, much better than I think most of us expected. Stylistically, he's probably the closest match to Kane. So for Southgate, when he's thinking about the makeup of the team, tactically, it's an easy decision to slot Abraham in. It'd be fascinating. I know he said that he won't beg Jamie Vardy but to come out of retirement, but Vardy is the next best English striker, so it'd be fascinating to see what happens there. Ings has to come into the equation, doesn't he? And I know that we're all guilty of getting overexcited with young'uns. I'll tell you now, Mason Greenwood, if you want a player off the bench at the Euros, I know it's early, and I know that people will be saying, oh, let him play. He... off the bench, I don't know if England have a better option at the moment. Have you seen the quality of his finishing?
Yeah, but you haven't mentioned a player who's just played 200 games for Manchester United and he's only 22 and is having the best season of his life.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, Rashford. Well, Rashford will play, but he'll play on the left. I mean... Well,
where does Sterling play?
On the right.
And where does Sancho play?
On the bench. We got it sorted. I don't see Rashford playing as the number nine. I don't see it. Not because he can't. But because he himself, how many times have we moaned square pegs, round holes, play players in the positions they like best? He likes it best on the left, doesn't he?
Mm. I just think the way England play, though, I mean, you know, physically, yes, Tammy Abraham and Harry Kane might be similar, but when Kane plays for England, he often drops into that sort of number 10
that's
position.
That's what Tammy hasn't got.
And then, and the runners, you know, with Sterling, Sancho, Rashford, whatever. And Tammy
Ings
hasn't
can
got
do that.
Yeah, although it's what he's done is phenomenal and will keep Southampton up if he carries on like this. His run is incredible. And I'm very pleased for him because he's had so many injury problems over the years and he's just been waiting for... He knew he had that ability in him. But I can't see him forcing his way into England's squad at this late date to be a regular starter, even with injuries to Kane to contend.
Yeah, I just think, Greenwood is a natural finisher. And when he comes in off the right on that left foot, he's two-footed. I can see. Well, he's already proven that he's a super sub of sorts. He might be a wild card. I'm not saying he should be starting, but he would certainly come into my thinking in Gareth's shoes. Mm.
Take your point, Dom, about the unpredictability of this transfer window. Looking at Palace, do you expect Wilf Sahar to be there at the end of the window?
Yep. Mm. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Situation hasn't really changed with Zaha in terms of Crystal Palace's point of view. To them, he's still worth. He's actually worth £100 million plus because they owe 25% to United on any transfer fee. And so if they sold him for 80, they're only getting 60. And you're not going to get a replacement like for like at that calibre. A player so integral to everything that Palace want to do. And for all Zaha's change of agents, now we've got Pini Zahavi working for him and putting out feelers to Bayern Munich and Chelsea and the likes... Doesn't matter unless these clubs are willing to fork out the money, then he stays at Palace. He's got a contract till 2023. If I was, this is going to sound crazy given the last 18 months, but if I was Wilfred Zaha, I'd say to Pini Zahavi, go and get me a new 5-year contract at Crystal Palace with a £100 million buyout clause in it, on £150,000 a week, whatever you want. If I stay at Crystal Palace, then I'm made for life. Mm. If I don't, and somebody forks out £100 million, then I get my big opportunity. But Zahavi won't do that because... And it's all complicated. It's very complicated because there's a USM issue and, you know, he's still under contract with USM. So if he moved now, and I think even if he moved in the summer as well, because I think that contract may run until...
USM for the viewers and listeners are...
Oh, sorry, that's his previous agent, Will Salthouse, his company, Unique Sports Management. So if he moved in that period, if Zahavi got him a move, then there would be a commission owed actually to USM. So it's all very complicated. Well,
modern football.
That matters to those involved. The issue I've got with Zaha is I think he's ready, but I don't see that many gaps at the big clubs. No. Like Chelsea are perennially linked with him, I don't think he's really...
They've got a lot of his type of player.
I don't know if he's that much better or even better than what they've got. And Spurs, you could argue something similar with well, certainly with Son. I think I would rather have Son than Zaha. Would rather have Zaha than Moura, probably. But yeah, there are no sort of obvious gaps.
No, they're not. And which is why the sort of foreign option, the Munichs or the PSGs or whatever, are slightly more interesting. But again, it's a massive outlay for these clubs. And I mean, the whole notion that Bayern Munich might have tried to get him on loan is such nonsense. I mean, I don't believe it happened, to be honest, but if indeed it is such opportunism, it's almost taking the mickey.
And paying £100 million, as talented as he is, as brilliant as he is as a dribbler, paying £100 million for a guy that doesn't really score that many goals.
Yeah. Well, that is still the point, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, there's outrage whenever that figure is quoted. Yeah. Oh, he's not worth that. Well, to Palace, he is.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. They go down. That's £100 million through the, just for dropping into the Championship. Yeah.
Let's dwell for a second, if we could, Adrian, on someone who, when he does leave the stage, will miss.
Yeah.
Sergio Aguero. Mm. You know, obviously we're talking about records, Premier League records, beating Thierry Henry. Mm. It's almost a daft question. How good is he?
Oh, God. Really, really good. He's just class, isn't he? I must admit, before he arrived in the Premier League, I wasn't that sure about him. He was a bit lightweight and he's slippery. Obviously, very good movement, but wasn't convinced he'd be a success. But he's been outrageously good, playing for the right club at the right time as well, with the style of football that City have adopted down the years. No, just sensational. I don't personally think he's as good as Thierry Henry was in his pomp. I think Thierry was the best Premier League player I've seen, but he's right up there, isn't he? And I think there's plenty of life in him yet. I don't think there's any panic at Manchester City, or there shouldn't be any panic to worry about replacing him just yet, as he proved against Villa. He's still got it.
Mm. City were terrific against Villa, but they had nothing to play against, did they? How good, or what are the realistic limits of City's ambitions for the rest of this year if, as you know, Pep says, well, Liverpool have got the league.
Yeah, they got to finish second, haven't they? At the very least, and
still win a trophy.
Well, Champions League. They win the Carabao Cup every year, don't they? So they've won that. They could quite easily win the FA Cup as well. It's finishing second, and they'll finish second probably with 90 odd points.
Yeah.
It's that ridiculous.
Yeah. The failures.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's been an interesting season for Guardiola, and I think again one where their recruitment department might look at themselves and think we probably took our eyes off the ball slightly last summer, and it's one bad injury to a key centre half and not replacing Vincent Kompany adequately has really cost them.
Bang on. Yes. Absolutely.
But they will learn from that, presumably.
Yeah, I think they let Guardiola down there. Or maybe Pep himself didn't push hard enough for it. I don't know. But that, it just doesn't make any sense, does it?
Mm. With Villa, I said, didn't have anything to play against. That looked a relegation team.
There's a few relegation teams at the moment around the Premier League.
Well, Bournemouth.
Bournemouth looked worse than Villa. But yeah, Villa, it's a big month for them, isn't it? And again, it goes back to the signings. They spent a lot of money on Wesley. It hasn't worked. He's now crocked.
It's £133 million,
I think. Yeah, I mean, some of the guys that they brought in, Douglas Luiz, has scored a few worldies, but hasn't convinced as a top-class player in his position. Marvellous. Nakamba's not been marvellous. And at the back, there are big problems. I think Holes, Mings... They've got good players there. They're not special. But,
yeah, tackled by Tom Heaton as well.
That's a hammer blow.
Yeah, it's dreadful. So, like Pepe Reina's going to go.
I think he's going to turn up today on a loan spell. So good luck to him. They need to choose the right striker. I mean, there are some good hitmen in the Championship. I think I'm just thinking about where they might go. I'm looking at someone like Jarrod Bowen or something at Hull. He's been fantastic playing for a team that's particularly good on the counter-attack, and that's where Villa will have to play between now and the end of the season. A finisher, someone that can score goals from nowhere. You know, if they've got that ambition to stay in the Premier League, I think they might need to show it in the transfer market in their pursuit of a front man or even two front men. because Wesley on his own wasn't enough. Mm. So I think they should go for two.
The only thing about Villa, and I know that was a horrible, horrible occasion for them, but they were playing Manchester City. Mm. They had actually won two of their previous three league games against Norwich.
They were good against Leicester.
Unconvincingly. Mm. Yeah, they were good against Leicester in the League Cup, but they also won at Burnley, which a result that should set the alarm bells ringing at Turf Moor, because they're another club that suddenly Burnley are looking slightly dicey. So Villa will target certain matches as winnable games, and what do they need? Probably four or five wins?
I suppose, yeah. Look, I think that Villa are better than Burnley at the moment. They're better than Bournemouth. They're better than Norwich. I think they'll survive. Mm. But to lose Heaton, McGinn, yeah, and your main centre forward Wesley, yeah, that's terrible luck. Yeah, I've got a bit of sympathy.
I don't think that. I mean, I did something last week on this. It's not luck though, is it? It's a ridiculous schedule. Yeah. It's what it is. Yeah. It is a ridiculous schedule. There was a round of Premier League games shoved in there, which was unnecessary.
It was interesting, we were talking off air about, you know, you did a piece about the physiology of a footballer. In layman's terms, how much physical pressure are they coming under, those players?
You know, I spent time at a Premier League club's medical department, sports science department, and they are cutting edge. And it wasn't an elite club. It was a bog standard Premier League club. It would have been the same system that they have at Villa, same system they have at Norwich, whatever. Those guys are doing everything they can to get these players fit and available for matches, but they're completely knackered by the schedule. It's unreasonable to ask a player to play five games in 2 weeks, including the cup competition over Christmas, four games in 10 days, whatever you want in the Premier League. These guys can't work miracles. I mean, the managers are under pressure. The managers know that their jobs are on the line, so they look at the results and the data that's compiled by the sports scientists, and they know that there's a risk in playing certain players. They may not be completely recovered from the previous match. They may be coming back from an injury. The number of soft tissue injuries over Christmas, I think it was like 55 soft tissue injuries alone over those four Premier League games from the 21st through to the 1st. And then you've got I always thought the ACLs were like, oh, that's a freak injury. It's not. There's fatigue when you jump in your muscles and your quads. You're landing awkwardly because your body isn't fresh enough. And that's what brings the ACLs in as well. Something's got to be done. And Premier League clubs are actually saying, OK, we've got this winter break in February. It's winter break where half the teams play 1 week and half the team the next week. Just when players get into a rhythm, well, they play every week and their bodies get used to that. Take out that round of fixtures 28th, 29th December and put that onto that other weekend in February, which you've now allocated as a winter break. And it's actually better for them to do that. Mm. I mean, they will cope better with that. And did anybody really enjoy any of those games over the New Year?
Standards are lowered as well. Fans aren't getting as much value for money. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think we've come to a tipping point now where that... no one wants the games between Boxing Day and New Year's. You don't need it. Mm.
Championship didn't do it that weekend.
Yeah, it's daft and it's cruel, really, on the players. And too many good players have now been robbed of several months of the season.
Yeah. Given all that, the last thing you need is to get your best player suspended for three games, which has happened at Arsenal. Yeah. Aubameyang, how are they going to cope without him?
Well, they can cope without him. He's been a talisman, hasn't he? Particularly away from home.
He's scored almost half their goals, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think 75% away from home. So, exactly. So it's a big loss. No complaints about the red card. But they've got quality. I think Martinelli maybe will get his opportunity, and he's a player that excites the supporters. They love him. It reminds that there are shades of Luis Suarez in him. I'm not saying that he's going to have that career. He might do. Great finisher, but insanely hungry to impress. And he's got that edge to his game as well that fans of the team love, but maybe opponents won't. So, no, Martinelli, I'm excited to see him. And it's up to others to step up. Lacazette is playing well without scoring, so he needs to step up. But look, on Arsenal, I'm loving Arteta's work. I'm so enthused by what I've seen so far and encouraged that he is the right man to turn around the team. He's going to demand a rise in standards on and off the pitch. And I'm already seeing huge strides being made. So yeah, this it's early days, I know, but very, very encouraged by Arteta.
Mm. They're a good indication on Saturday because they've got Sheffield United, who are getting the maximum out of themselves. Chris Wilder's got his new longer-term contract. I think runs to 2024. What are the realistic limits of his ambitions for that football club?
You know, they're just having a dream season under a manager who has been successful at every level. He's managed that, I think, pretty much. I mean, including non-league.
Yeah, a decade ago, he was Oxford, taking right? Oxford out of non-league.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, what 10 years he's had.
Yeah. And he just, he's breath of fresh air. I just think it's, everything about Sheffield United is progressive and at a pretty much old school club. You go there and it's still the old school atmosphere and it's brilliant. And they're living a, they're pinching themselves. They must be pinching themselves at what's been going on. But it's, again, it's meticulous planning. They spent big money for them. I mean, people like McBurnie costing £20 million, that's a big signing. Mm. But they've put a lot of other established Premier League teams to shame in terms of the balance of their squad. They've got like four or five strikers who can play and they can rest people there. It's no surprise, they don't have any outfield injuries at the moment. Sheffield United don't. And, you know, you look at some of the other clubs that are playing once a week and have been in the Premier League a long time, and they've got ageing squads, or they've got squads where they're heavily loaded in certain areas and they have nobody back up in others. Sheffield United have got a real balance to them. There's a real strategy. There's a real... He's made sure, he and his recruitment department have just made sure they've got everything they need to give them the best chance to stay in the division. And actually, they've just maintained all the momentum they've had for going through League One and the Championship.
If you put Sheffield United and Wolves into... You had them wearing bibs. One's wearing a black bibs, the other wears white bibs. And you couldn't see the faces of the players. By watching them, you'd know exactly who they were, wouldn't you? You just watched the game for 5 minutes and you would know, oh, that's Sheffield United. You can see what they're doing.
But it's a really secure and strong identity.
Absolutely. It's every single player knows their jobs. We all know what they do. Stopping them isn't as easy for rival managers as perhaps they thought. So, no, it's been stunning from Sheffield United. I mean, they're already probably they've exceeded their own expectations. I don't know how much further they can go. Obviously, Leicester won the league, didn't they? So I don't think anyone should ever not dream of that anymore after what they did. But yeah, it's been brilliant. And I think Wilder, of all the young British managers young English managers, is he's not that young, I suppose, now, but has got a chance, you know. He's got a chance of managing either an elite club or potentially being in the frame for England down the line. It would be some good competition. Mm-hmm. But because he's such a modernist and because of the brand of football that they play, I wouldn't be against it. If Southgate walked away tomorrow and the FA turned to Wilder, I'd be quite excited to see that happen.
Mm. Adrian mentioned Leicester there. Are they stalling? And is that because of the issues that you talked about?
It's fatigue. They just look knackered. Yeah. They just look really tired. When they lose, it doesn't take a lot to disrupt these teams and for injuries to then creep in, because you lose one player through it can be a freak injury. And the knock-on effects of bringing people in who are ring rusty, who might then pick up muscle injuries themselves, or playing people out of position who's the bodies aren't used to playing that position. Little things like that, which I was blissfully unaware of, I'll be honest, until this time last week when I started researching it. And Didi's absence is massive for them. Yeah. I mean, he's just been brilliant. He's arguably one of the most effective defensive midfielders in the division. And okay, Choudhury, fantastic. He's got a load of potential, but he's now suddenly going to be asked to be playing three games in a week. You can't do that. You can't suddenly drop somebody in like that and say, right, here we go, just hit the ground running. And so all their fatigue, all the problems they're having at the moment, you can trace back to a schedule that is too demanding.
Yeah, and Didi has made Tielemans and Maddison look better players, and Soyuncu and Evans look better players because he plays in between them. And I think he is the best, actually, considering that Fernandinho is now a centre-half. And Liverpool haven't really got one. I mean, you look around the league, I think indeed he's the one. And Conte, I guess, is still doing it. But yeah, he's the closest I've seen to N'Golo Conte in terms of being a specialist in that role. He's worth an awful lot of money. And it'd be fascinating to see if a club comes and tests Leicester's resolve.
Yeah. Look at Tielemans. There's a prime example. Yeah. Player that, you know, last year came on loan to Leicester and did really well. Yeah. But in France, he's had a winter break. He's had a breather in mid-season, and now he's suddenly, I mean, he's looked tired and in the last few weeks and had to be rested. And you know, then you're asking Piatt to come
and in. It affects different teams in different ways. But Leicester is high energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is a Brendan Rodgers team? What's made them successful? Yeah. It's playing at a high tempo, pressing. Mm-hmm. And if you are 3% down on the intensity of your work, Leicester are probably a 30% a weaker side. That's how important that edge is to them.
Absolutely right.
So. I just want to end this by getting the tin helmets out. There's a quote from Steven Gerrard saying that allowing the old firm to compete in England could, and I quote, save the Scottish game. Discuss.
Well, you did give me a heads up on this, I must confess. And I've thought about it. And I'm all in favour. I'm speaking as a total football neutral, football lover. I think that the Premier League and the EFL would benefit from the Scottish clubs coming in, personally. What about changing it from 92 to 100 clubs, bringing in the 8 top clubs in the SPL, inviting them in, start at the bottom, you make them come through the leagues. And then you've got 20-team Premier League, 20-team, 4 leagues of 20 across the EFL. Fatigue, you know, the overplaying is not so much of an issue. And I just think it would enthuse the fans in England. It would enthuse the fans in Scottish football. And let's face it, what is Scottish football without those eight clubs? I would say that the supporter base must cater for 85, 90% of Scottish football. I think it'd be an exciting new chapter for British football.
Is it realistic to expect clubs of Rangers and Celtic's magnitude in terms of, you know, the crowds that they get? Yeah. And the traditions that they espouse to start off in League Two or even the League Three.
Rangers did it I know they were punished, but they climbed through the leagues. It was quite an exciting period for Rangers, wasn't it? I don't know. I know that there is a lot of politics here, and I know that there are people be screaming at me at the moment, but just speaking as someone that wants the English game to thrive, and actually for Rangers and Celtic to fulfil their potential as football clubs, because they can't at the moment. I think they need to come into the English game. We've got Swansea and Cardiff and Newport. Why can't we have those guys?
This is brilliant timing, isn't it? We've got a time where this country is suddenly going to go into Brexit.
Yes.
We've got the calls for Scottish independence mounting all the time, and now we're going to say, oh, yeah, come and play with us. Yeah.
you don't sound convinced, then?
No chance.
I don't think so. I just think Rangers and Celtic...
It would be brilliant. It would be really exciting, but... And we always will remember the sort of, you know, the Leeds Rangers ties in the 90s and etc. But no chance.
Well, I think actually it's quite a timely idea, and Steven Gerrard makes a really good point. I think this is what's going to happen. Once the Super League is launched, probably midway through this decade, the old firm will be in a revised Premier League like a shot. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.